Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone, I'm your host Hugh McTeer and I welcome you along to this Monday edition of La Liga Lowdown. There's plenty of La Liga chat to come in part 2 as we answer listener questions. We've seen a few interesting Segunda related questions, but first off, we focus on the Spanish national team.
De Ceballos para Alba, Paco Alcácer, gol, 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 y gol.
It was a hard-fought 2-1 win in Bucharest for Spain, especially as Diego Llorente was sent off just before the final 10 minutes. Before that, Sergio Ramos had put Spain into a 1-0 half-time lead from the penalty spot, his 21st goal for his country, which puts him into the top 10 of Spain's all-time top scorers list. Spain then went 2-0 up in the second half when Paco Alcácer was able to knock in a Jordi Alba cross, but this move was really made by Dani Ceballos and his excellent defence split and pass. Florin Andoni, who's played in Spain for the likes of Cordoba and Deportivo La Coruña, came on for Romania and pulled one back, but 10-man Spain held on with Kepa making a couple of big stops in the final moments.
Ahí está Oyarzabal, se la da Rodrigo, gol, 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 gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, against the Faroe Islands. There were 9 changes to the lineup that started in Romania, with only Sergio Ramos and Rodrigo Moreno keeping their spots. And Rodrigo made the most of his minutes by scoring the first 2 Spain goals of the night, one in the first half for a not so impressive 1-0 half-time lead, and then a deflected shot into the top corner at the beginning of the second half to give Spain a bit of a cushion. They really struggled to break down the Faroe Islands let's say revolutionary 6-4-0 formation. But substitute on the night, Paco Alcácer did manage to get 2 late goals to make it a more typical Spain versus Faroe Island scoreline of 4-0. Now, let's bring in La Liga Lowdown's Paco Pollitt, Roman de Arquer and Alex Fitzpatrick to discuss the whole week for the Spanish national team. First off, what did you all think of Robert Moreno's squad? Were any players left out or any in the squad who you think shouldn't have been? Roman, let's go with you first.
Well, I personally like the squad. I thought it was a good selection of players. But maybe I did miss out Cazorla because he's been playing really well with Villarreal. He could have been there again. Would have been nice. And maybe Coque because he's usually leading Atletico Madrid.
Well, most of the time, happy with the fact that 3 Valencia players were included. And overall, I'm pretty happy with the team because I believe that both Luis Enrique back in the day and now Robert Moreno are basing the collapse on merit and not on the history of every single player in the national team. Experience is obviously a very important fact, but it feels like they value all of the work that every single player does very highly, and they regard that very highly, and that is the absolute crucial detail in calling up every single player in the last few months.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you make about Merritt. In the Romania game, there were all the players in the Spain team came from 10 different clubs, which is amazing. It shows you that they're not just picking players from Barcelona and Real Madrid, they're picking players from the likes of Valencia, Real Sociedad, all around the league. Alex, what about you? Any squad surprises?
The surprise for me was more of an inclusion into the starting 11 and that of Diego Llorente. I think a basic principle for me at national level has always been that you need to be in form, you need to be starting regularly for your club side. Now, the season's only 3 games old, but he hasn't been able to hit the ground running due to a suspension that carried over from last season. And then he was left out of the side's second game, which was away at Mallorca. He returned to the side for the third, which ended in defeat in the derby against Athletic Club. Inigo Martinez started in central defence last time out in the 3-0 victory over Sweden in the summer. He didn't make the squad at all this time around. He did also miss the early part of the season due to injury. But like Llorente, he returned for the first 90 minutes of the season in that local derby between Athletic Club and Real Sociedad. But I think finding a regular partner for Sergio Ramos seems to be something that Robert Moreno needs to settle on. In the summer games at the end of the 18-19 season, Sergio Ramos was also paired with Mario Hermoso. So I think that's a key area that he's going to need to look at.
This was Spain's first ever away win in Romania after 6 failed attempts to win there. It's a really difficult place to go, I guess. Strong atmosphere in the stadium, you could see that. How impressive was this victory, Paco, over Romania?
Well, I believe it was very impressive. I think Spain had the game under control for around one full hour, 60 minutes. But scoring the second goal was actually counterproductive for the team. They relaxed a bit, and then Romania began growing in the game and believing they could actually pick up a point. And the atmosphere surely helped, because the fans, you could listen to it in the TV broadcast. They were fiery. They were pushing their team very hard. So, yeah, overall, it was very impressive.
Well, these were the first matches for Robert Moreno since he was named as permanent Spain coach. Roman, what did you think of Moreno's team selection and tactics? And obviously, he's been in charge as well on a caretaker basis before this international break. Is he qualified for the job?
Well, for some reason here in Spain, there's an ongoing debate on whether he should be the manager, because, of course, apparently he lacks the experience as a first manager in important clubs and national teams. But to be honest, I mean, he's been working with Luis Enrique really closely in Roma, in Celta, in Barca, in Spain. And now I think it's a good opportunity for him, and he's proving he has the knowledge to take this job on. I mean, against Romania, I think he chose the perfect kind of squad, because it was a good mix of talent and experience, which is what I think that Spain actually needs. And then also, I think it was great that he went for players like Ceballos, like Fabian Ruiz, who are like the ongoing future of this national team, and they have the quality that the team needs. And also, it's great that Paco Alcácer was a starter, because for me, he should have had more opportunities in the past, because he's scoring goals and he could be a really important striker for Spain.
One decision that really caught the headlines was the decision to start Kepa ahead of David De Gea against Romania. I didn't actually realise this, but this was the fourth match in a row that Kepa had played instead of De Gea. Who should be the starter in goals at Euro 2020? Can we know that now, or can we already say it should be Kepa or De Gea one way or the other? Alex, what do you think?
Well, David De Gea, he's a goalkeeper of undoubtable quality, but he is one who seems to have lost his way slightly in comparison to the very, very high standards that he sets himself. And I think that's the context that this discussion needs to be in, is that there's been a drop-off in his form, but from a very, very high starting point. There have been a number of high-profile errors recently from De Gea in the Premier League, the Champions League and internationally for Spain. Robert Moreno has stressed after the Romania game that he hasn't got a first-choice goalkeeper. Ultimately, I think a coach needs to be able to rely on the consistency of performance in a goalkeeper. And with De Gea's recent errors putting him very much in the spotlight, for now at least, I think Kepa will be the first choice.
Another Premier League player who played against Romania and really stood out was Dani Ceballos. But should he really be a Premier League player? Real Madrid, what must they have been thinking, Paco, as they watched him just turn it on against Romania?
Well, they might be thinking that they could use some of that talent in their squad this year. And actually, I would reframe the sentence and say, what was Zidane thinking when he shooed him off the squad last summer? Because Real Madrid executives actually do know just how ridiculous ridiculously good Ceballos is. But the coach really didn't believe in him. So I think we should congratulate Arsenal fans for the great football they're going to witness this season from Ceballos. He's brilliant. He showed it once again against Romania, for example. And he's definitely one of the best under-23 players in a whole continent. But yeah, I think that it wasn't the brightest move to let Ceballos go last summer. And I believe Real Madrid are going to repent doing so. Because the season is going to be very long for them, and in some points they will definitely need a player with that sort of talent.
Spain thrashed the Faroe Islands 4-0 on Sunday night. It took them a while to get the goals, but they were in complete control throughout. 70% possession for Spain, 30 shots compared to the 2 shots of the Faroe Islands. When a team like Spain takes on a team at the level of the Faroe Islands, a team that has to resort to just packing the box and trying to keep the scoreline down, it doesn't teach as much, does it, Alex?
To be honest, I don't think that these type of games are particularly useful for anybody. This game would have been prestigious for the Faroe Islands side, something the players will always remember. But it really does nothing for them to develop them as footballers. And it becomes a damage limitation exercise, sitting 10 men behind the ball. And I think in order to really help nations such as the Faroes develop, their players need to be playing competitive fixtures against nations of a similar level where they can play a more expansive brand of football and have a real chance of a result. The fixture also does nothing really for the Spanish players. Even if nations choose to use it as an opportunity to blood some new players, the standard at which they're playing and the pattern of the game is so alien to what they would normally play at that really there is very little benefit to be taken for anyone.
Mm-hmm. And Spain very much on course to qualify now for Euro 2020. What do they have to do, everyone, to make it a successful tournament? Paco, let's go with you first.
I'll go straight to the point. 2 reliable centre-backs and a reliable informed striker. I think Spain have the tools in the midfield and when generating chances, but having a world-class number 9 who slots in absolutely every chance he has, that would make the difference. Maybe Paco Alcácer is that man. Who knows? Maybe Rodrigo improves. Maybe Morata steps up his game. Maybe Diego Costa. But in short, Spain need a new David Villa.
I have to agree with Paco on the striker thing. I think we need someone who can score consistently because we've been trying so many strikers along the years and we still haven't found our David Villa, as he mentioned. And I think maybe Paco Alcácer could be this guy because he's scoring a lot with his club in Germany. And I think when he plays with Spain, he usually tends to score. He has a good average. So, I mean, if we can find that striker to lead us and score goals, Spain will be a very important team. And also, I think we have to be feared by the other teams because right now, Spain are an important team, are a big team, but they're not maybe as big as maybe France or maybe the Dutch or Germans, etc. So Robert Moreno actually said in an interview that before the Euro 2020, he wanted to find the toughest friendlies games he can find, the toughest rivals, because I think he wants to prove to the world that Spain are going to fight for that Euro Cup and they're going to try and win it no matter what.
Personally, I think the stability of selection and stability of the environment around the squad is an absolute must. The World Cup campaign was doomed before it even got going last time out with the issues around the departure of the manager to Real Madrid and the installation of Fernando Hierro at the very, very last minute. The results saw lack of in that competition were there for all to see. And for a nation such as Spain to go out when they did was simply not good enough. What's followed since then has been the tragic and obviously totally unavoidable events around Luis Enrique and his daughter's illness, which led to the appointment of Moreno. Moreno said last week in the build-up to the Romania game that he'd step aside if Enrique wished to return. And whilst that's a noble statement, I think the best thing for Spanish football at this time is stability. There's been far too much change in recent years. Enrique's time will come again once he's had the opportunity to fully grieve and he feels that he's ready to return to top-level management.
Well, that's all for our Spain discussion. Paco, Roman and Alex will all be back to tackle our listener questions in part 2. That's after this.
Hi. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back, everyone, to part two of this Monday's La Liga Lowdown podcast. In part one, we discussed the Spanish national team and their victories over Romania and the Faroe Islands. Here in part two, we have Paco, Roman and Alex back and ready to answer some of the questions that you guys sent us in on Twitter. So let's go. Let's start with this one from @CaptainCoke. How competitive will La Liga be this season? I want everyone to answer this one. Alex, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredibly competitive this season. It's a really good sign for the league that Atleti have started so strongly, 3 wins out of 3, and the big two have also dropped points. I feel that Real Madrid will continue to struggle for consistency in comparison to Barcelona and Atleti, but they'll still finish comfortably, in my opinion, third. The rest of the league, we've seen some strange results already this season. Leganés, Eibar, Espanyol, Getafe started unexpectedly poorly, really, whilst last season's goal-shy Granada have found the net 7 times and are joint top scorers with Barcelona. All in all, I think that it's going to bring an unpredictable and competitive season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty similar to last year, to be honest. It was really interesting, especially mid-table. The fight for Europe, that was fantastic. And even there was a little bit of a fight for the title for a while until Barca just kind of pulled away. So I think hopefully it'll be pretty similar to last year, but maybe a bit tighter at the top with Atletico, who started off really well. And I think Madrid, sooner or later, will start to get their rhythm back. So it could be an interesting season.
And in my case, I expect it to be very competitive, at least if we remove Barca and Atletico from the equation. I think Real will suffer a drawback in results and they are going to start fighting at the same level as Sevilla, Valencia or even other surprise guests to this party. And in my case, I've been lucky enough to see a few games live already. Villarreal, Granada, Real Sociedad. We've seen in the first 3 games that no team will go down without putting up a fight. Everybody can beat everybody. And those are great news for the fans.
Next question is from @GeorgeCHeeks. And this one asks, where do we expect Celta Vigo to finish this season? New additions seem to have improved them from being a one-man show. Roman, they signed a couple of Barcelona players. It's also starting to look like the Celta Vigo Academy sides from years ago. They brought all these guys back together. What do you think of Celta Vigo?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think it's not a one-man show anymore. In the first few games, we've kind of seen this, where it's not only about Aspas again and again. So I think Celta could easily finish on the top half of the standings, maybe even fight for Europe if everything pans out well. And I mean, bringing in Denis Suarez, Rafinha, Santi Mina, these are extremely good players. A bit unlucky in their other clubs, but I think they have the quality and they know the club really well. So if Escrivá manages to make everything work properly, they could be a very interesting team to watch this season.
Another one here from George. Given the pre-season optimism, should we be worried about Real Betis's relatively poor start?
Well, Betis had a strong first half to the season last year and then they steadily dropped away. So they went from 5th and dropped away down into 10th position. And Betis fans will be hoping that this form isn't a continuation of that. I think, though, it's far too early to be worried for any fan of any La Liga club. That said, with the amount of money that the club spent in the summer, there'll be high expectations of what they can achieve this year. And they'll certainly be expecting to battle in the top half of the league rather than the bottom half. Any side who signs and loses a number of players in the summer window, as Betis did though, they're going to take some time to gel. Their opening game against Real Valladolid, clearly a disappointing result to lose that one. They followed it up with defeat at the Camp Nou. It's no disgrace at all. I think most sides will lose there, as they do almost every season. But Betis seem to have got back on track with the victory over Leganés in the final game before the break. The club's got three winnable home games against Getafe, Levante and Eibar to come between now and the start of October. And I think it will give a much clearer guide of how Betis' season is going to pan out after those games.
Mm-hmm. And the next question comes from @IWG86. And this one asks, thoughts on the embarrassing mess at Malaga? Paco, what's going on at Malaga?
You just have to see how disappointed Victor Sánchez del Amo, which, by the way, is a friend from La Liga Loda, and we obviously wish him the best. He was very disappointed this weekend in press conference with the whole situation. And I'm quoting here, "I feel disappointed and angry." And later he said, "This is not the project me and my staff were promised, the one which we based on the terms of our contract extension last summer." My thoughts, Malaga fans don't deserve an owner as petty and as irresponsible as Sheikh Altani. The whole Shinji Okazaki disgraceful drama sums up the situation pretty well. You managed to bag a world-class star to play in Segunda División, you mess up the planning and financial fair play conditions, and finally you're unable to include him in the official squad in the last day of the summer transfer market. At the same time, you make him a free agent and you set up the red carpet for Huesca to sign him under excellent conditions. So that's a hat trick for Malaga. It's impossible to do worse. When Altani came to Spain in 2011 and he suddenly began investing and signing players left and right, such as Baptista, Joaquin, Isco from Valencia for 6 million euros, only a few suspected it would eventually end up in a civil war right now inside the club, with the fans angry at the owner and with, by the way, Caminero and Joaquin Jofre, which are the middlemen in this drama, nowhere to be found in the last few days. So Victor Sánchez del Amo is on his own, fans are on their own, and I absolutely support the Malaga fan base and hope they can get rid at some point of poor management like the current one they have to endure.
Another one for you, Paco, another one. Off the pitch drama. This is from @TomWelton27. Can you tell us a bit more about the court case regarding the potential match fixing in 2011 during the Levante Real Zaragoza game? How likely is it for us to see genuine consequences against the players? So this was the game where Real Zaragoza won at Levante in the final round to survive, and this match fixing allegations that come out of this have finally gone to court now 8 years later. Paco, what's going on with this one?
I'm ecstatic that I'm getting all of the easy questions, okay? Because this is very tricky to explain. Okay, but let's go for it. Last Monday, by the way, I was live on 2011 watching that game. And
I knew you would be. I knew you would be. That's why you get all these questions, because you're there on the ground, Paco. You're always there.
You know, I have to admit that something seemed off in that game. I didn't know back in the day where to put my finger, because actually the goals scored by Zaragoza were very good goals. I remember one of them being a free kick that was amazing. But yeah, last Monday, the hearing began in Valencia regarding that game, and many bizarre statements have been made in the last few days. Some players, such as Xavi Torres, explaining that the fact that they didn't spend money in the weeks after that game in 2011 was due to them living at their parents' house. That was his his point. As he was living at home with his parents, he didn't have to spend money. So that was his explanation. Or former Zaragoza coach, the Mexican Javier Aguirre, admitting that he just signed papers and contracts without really knowing what was in them. He said he was signing papeles en blanco, with no text in them. He just signed them because he was 100% trusting Zaragoza. And later he admitted he made a mistake. Overall, the feeling is that something went on in that game, but we might never actually know to what extent. And about consequences that Tom asked about. Well, the timing of the matter is very tricky. We're talking about a game played in 2011, which was reported in 2013, and it has taken 6 years for the trial to happen. And then whatever the outcome, remember, players, coaches, whoever is convicted, they can appeal again. And the process will take another 2-3 more years. So most players are going to be retired by them. However, some of them who are already working as scouts, as coaches, as sports directors, for example, Jorge López is working in Valencia's youth academy, or maybe the coach himself, Javier Aguirre, they could be facing a ban of up to 6 years. And that might be a big punishment, depending on each individual case. But remember that the trial isn't over yet.
Yeah, the case goes on there. And finally, our last question, not for you, Paco, this time. You can have a break. At Hassan Ashas asks, thoughts on UD Almería? They've just gone out and basically signed a whole new squad with a new owner. He asks, could we expect another Malaga there? Are their new signings good or just a waste of money on random players? Also, why do they want to change their logo? Roman, what's going on at Almería?
Well, I mean, when there's foreign investment, I mean, there's always risks. So anything can happen in the long term. So I think at the moment it looks good. I mean, the results are there. They've won most of the games. They even beat Huesca, which was one of the favorites possibly to go back up to Primera. And I mean, they're trying to build an exciting project there, even though it's based on money. But I mean, they've brought in players like Ante Koric, Arvin Appia, who apparently United really wanted, but he came to Almeria, Juan Muñoz, and there's a long etc. of players. So I mean, at first it looks good. But this has to like develop into a very stable project to work out. So we'll have to see in time if it really was worth international or foreign money coming in. And about the shirt and the logo, when I saw the design, it felt like it just came out of AliExpress or something like that. I mean, the logo is pretty terrible. And the design on the shirt, it's just, I don't know, I have no comments. Why do they want to do this? I honestly have no idea. Probably they just want to renew everything and make it more modern, but with that design, there's no modern thing about it. It looks really, really bad. So.
I wanted to add about the logo situation that it actually resembles esports design. You know, it has that kind of vibe, and that I actually know the manager who was in charge before the new owner came around, Oscar Fernandez. He used to be a coach in Atleti's youth academy. And he had left Atlético de Madrid, which is a huge club nowadays, to coach in Segunda División Almería. He made a gamble on that. The squad was with him. He had done a pretty great job this summer. And suddenly, in a day of July, getting the notification that the new owner wants to meet you and getting the sack right there. With the additional trouble of not being able to coach this season. That is weird. And I'm pretty much unfair on Oscar Fernandez. So I also wanted to add that.
Yeah, just 50 days he was in charge there. Didn't manage to coach any official games. He was, you know, really harshly dealt with there. We'll see how Almeria do. We'll see how Malaga do. Lots of second division chat here today. Thanks for all the questions you guys have sent in. Thanks for listening as well. We'll be back next Monday with our usual La Liga roundup with all the round 4 action. This has been our special international break podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it, and my thanks go out to Paco, Roman and Alex for their contributions. We'll speak to you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.